So we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 391.
Chairman, you have a constitutional problem.
Oh, that is a very good point. Close the work session, and we will hold for one more member.
Hi.
Mr. Chair, I'll be right here.
Are you the constitutional problem? No, we have to have four members for a call.
We only have three to go.
For a work session, yeah.
Can you go into work session without...
No.
Yeah.
You can go and hold public hearing.
With one.
Yeah. Even you. Even me. Mm-hmm. Any one of us can do a public hearing anytime, anywhere. It should be with the permission of the chairman if it's for a specific hearing.
For a public hearing, yeah.
Yeah, but you can fact-find it.
Never go into... You can't even open a work session.
Nope.
I think it's federal.
We can now.
For a congressional hearing.
Hey, man.
What's happening?
That's it.
Oh, you.
He just does it in his district.
What are we doing?
Oh, really? Mm. Three easy
little deals. Frank Shields. Money back guarantee. I want to talk about.
I never trust a money back guarantee from a preacher.
I want to talk about the amendment.
Open the work session on Senate Bill 391. Senator Shields. If you want to reacquaint us with Bill, and you have a dash one for us.
Right. To kind of reacquaint you with the bill, currently ORS 106.120 permits judges and other judicial officers and county clerks to perform marriages. You all know that. Judges and county clerks are permitted to charge a small personal fee when a marriage is performed outside of the courthouse or outside of normal working hours. However, they may not charge a fee when performing a wedding during working hours or at the courthouse, regardless of the fact that government staff and therefore general fund monies are used in the process. So the Senate Bill 391 does two things. It establishes a $25 fee to be charged when the judges perform the weddings. And two, it increases the fee for county clerks for the benefit of the county from $15 to $25. In its current form, Senate Bill 391 requires that the new fee dollars collected when judges or clerks perform weddings go to the state general fund. It seems reasonable when weddings are performed by state court judges who are paid from the general fund and whose staff is also paid by the general fund that happens. However, as discussed during the public hearing, and I know that there's still some concern about this, the staff of a justice court is paid by the various counties in which the justice sits as JPs. Staff of municipal judges is paid by the cities in the where the municipal judge sits. So the dash one amendment will allocate the revenue to the applicable city or the county general fund for marriages performed by clerks and justices and peaces or municipal judges. Now, I want to add real quickly that I just had a conversation a couple minutes ago and found out there's still a small problem that Dash 1 didn't address, but they think it's something that they can handle on the House side. If you want... Somebody was here a little bit ago and had that.
Is it Carl Myers? Is that who?
Might have been. I'm not sure. He said he could handle it. I don't want to typify it. But what he says is that in some cases, for instance, in his case, he is.
Here he comes.
Tell him to come on in. Do you want him to come up here?
Please.
How does it feel to be the lawyer that's actually wanted?
Judge Myers.
Chair Deckard. Chair Deckard, members of the committee, Carl Myers, on behalf of the Oregon Municipal Judges Association, the Oregon Justice of the Peace Association. Do you wish? I'm sorry, I was out in the hall trying to figure out what we could do with this.
We're in work session, looking at moving the bill along, and Senator Shields indicated that you might, you had one small objection that you might be willing to work out on the House side. Is that
and
right?
I have, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Again, my objection is that while the application of this fee to circuit judges might be appropriate, for the application of this to local judges who most often do these kind of weddings on their own time, and without any city or county resources, and in many occasions don't even do them in the jurisdiction in which they serve. So there's no nexus to the local jurisdiction that hires them, and in most cases on an hourly basis. I think the application of this, that fee to JP courts, Justice of the Peace courts, and to municipal courts is inappropriate. There are some cities who may work out arrangements with their own judge that if you do it on city time, then the city collects the fee or whatnot, but I think that ought to be, most of the municipal judges serve on a contract. JPs are elected and do serve, but depending on their caseload, most JPs don't have enough time to perform weddings on county time, use their weekends and so on, and however they use their staff, I couldn't tell you. In most cases, they handle it on their own. Mm-hmm. So I have talked with Senator Shields. I think that if we could just eliminate the local courts over on the House side, I'm happy to have this bill move, and as long as he would support our amendment as a friendly amendment on the House side, then I'm happy to have the bill move with the dash ones as proposed, and then we'll clean it up over there.
Not only that, but I'd be glad to go over there and make sure that happens with him. It makes sense to me. It's unfortunate. My staff prepared these dash one amendments. We sent them over to him, and I didn't get feedback until today that there was still a remaining problem. So if we pass this way, I'll take care of this one issue on the other side. You need to understand that there are judges who even circuit court judges or whoever, or even a Supreme Court justice, that'll go out and do a wedding, and they'll fill out all the paperwork themselves, and it'll be absolutely no cost to anybody. But by contrast, there are some circuit court judges, for instance, I heard of one circuit court judge who on Valentine's Day refused to even take work from the presiding judge of the county because that particular judge was so busy doing weddings all day that they couldn't do the other work of the court, okay? And their staff was doing paperwork, probably not only that day, but a couple other days, for all the weddings that that person had done. So while some judges don't do it, others do, and this would at least offset the general fund expense. It, like I said, it's a small fiscal, but it could raise $250,000 and help us a little bit. It's just a little bill.
Appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Farrelly.
I believe we're in work session.
We are in work session.
I'll move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 391.
Senator Farrelly has just moved recently the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 391. Any discussion?
To the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Farrelly.
I'm persuaded by Senator Shields that he will, in fact, endeavor to correct the deficiencies as indicated down the House side. And It really was the double your money back provision that he agreed to put in here. The failure of the success of the nuptials. Mr. Chairman, the dash one amendments are moved.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
In an effort at full disclosure, I have to admit that I actually married a former legislator and his wife. I didn't marry him. I presided at the event, and I'm happy to report that it lasted about 9 months. She had a gambling addiction and ended up with the car and the house.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, since there's no statutory authority for legislators to marry anybody, I'd say that the whole thing was doomed.
No, I had the authority of the county. It was a pain in the neck. I had to get the county clerk's authority to do it.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hannan.
Senator Shields, my concern with this bill, and you asked me about it the other day, is that the money that is generated by the circuit and the appellate judge or the tax court, my problem with it is the money goes in the general fund. And we increase invariably every session fee, fines, and assessments. And it's a backdoor approach to raising money for the general fund, but the money doesn't wind up going to the courts. And I would be more inclined to support this if I knew that the money was going to the operation of the courts rather than to go in to fund somebody's Timbuktu project in John Day, Oregon.
I was afraid you were going to say that.
That's my concern with the bill, because money is raised by the courts with fee, fines, and assessments, and there's millions of dollars that Mr. Myers can refer to, and yet we're cutting our courts down to 4 days a week, and we're cutting our judicial access down to the public, while at the same time nickel and diming them to death by increasing fees, fines, and assessments, and now we're adding marriage fee, $25. And if I was knowing that it would be money that would restore a judicial position somewhere or court day of operation, I would be more inclined to support it.
May I respond, Senator Hannon? Actually, I say this seriously. I wish you'd raise that. The chair asked me to talk to each of the six of you about the bill, and I did that. Because if you had suggested it, I would have probably gone and gotten an amendment at that time about that, too, because there's general fund shortfall everywhere, and certainly I'm a supporter of the court and would be glad to see the money get back into the judicial system. And, in fact, I would suggest that if you discuss that in your committee here and you decide you want to go that way, I'd be glad to do an amendment of that sort on the House side as well. The reason that I'm suggesting that is because you know the workload you have and you know how short the timelines are going to be, and if we could, since we are going to address one issue on the House side, if we could address that issue and put an amendment in that would likewise address the issue of trying to route this money back into the court system, that would be fine by me. I wouldn't have a problem with that.
Well, I would be willing to support it on the basis that I was going to be under the understanding that it goes to the House side and that dedicated monies derived from these types of fees would go to court functions and court operations.
Not to John Day.
Thank you. Senator Shields, you did what I had asked you to do, which is talk to all the members, so my inclination would be to keep the bill moving.
Yeah, that's fine. But I wanted to get it on the record.
Okay.
Thank you. Dash ones are before us. Any further discussion? Objections to the dash ones? So ordered.
Mr. Chairman, I move 391 as amended. And I believe it goes to the floor with the due pass recommendation, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Farrelly has moved the 391 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation discussion. Senator Starr.
Just for the record, this we're talking about a situation where it's a state judge or a judge that's on the state payroll that's performing a marriage on state time. That we're actually trying in a small fraction to recoup the cost of that time on basically state time. We're not talking about a judge who's marrying people on the weekend
right.
or when they're not on the time.
And I think that that's something that we will clarify even more as we do these amendments.
Very good. Thank you.
Talk about or contemplated on the House, yes.
Appreciate all the work on that, Senator Shields. Further discussion? Objections to 391 as amended to the floor with due pass. So ordered. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Senator Shields will carry that bill. Thank you, Carl. Senator Walker. Boy, they all got up. We'll do her bill next. Open a work session on Senate Bill 556. Joe, before we bring you guys up, let me give Senator Walker a chance to reacquaint us with this bill. Mazin, 556.
Yes, Mr. Chair, to refresh the memory, 556. Addresses the issue of the interest that is part of a refund payment for an overpayment or the seven different circumstances of a refund that you find in your step measure summary in the bottom where these refunds are due. At this time, those refunds are in statutes as 1% a month or 12% a year, and this bill changes that. There is an amendment to the bill to make it more workable, but I'll let the Senator talk about the amendment, and I have a revenue impact statement for you, your view, too.
Thank you. Senator Walker, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you reading while I rushed from my committee. I'm Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7, and I appreciate the opportunity for a work session on Senate Bill 556. This came before your committee previously, and as your administrators explained, the amount of interest that we are going to pay out on refunds. Since this bill's been heard, I've had a visit in my office from a couple of folks who are engaged in the practice of law representing people who appeal their property taxes, and as you can imagine, they are quite opposed to this bill. They represent clients on a contingency fee basis, so you can imagine that lowering the interest rate would have a significant impact on their business. They would also argue, which you may hear from them, that it's patently unfair that we would even consider reducing the amount of interest that we pay on a refund of a property tax appeal without correspondingly looking at a reduction in the interest on people who are delinquent in their property taxes. Previously, I gave you some awesome information when I was shopping for votes on this bill that pointed out to you what the delinquent interest rate is in other states near and dear to us, Washington to the north and California to the south, and Oregon is woefully below either of those states in the interest that they charge, both on delinquent interest and refund interest. I believe you should have that. It is an email that I received from Gary Bartholomew from Multnomah County Assessor's Office, and I think he is here today to discuss that with you if you have some questions. But as that document showed you, the delinquent interest for Washington State is 23%. That's the rate they charge. We charge a mere 16. But really, when you look at it, Oregon only charges 12% in reality because we only charge based on the outstanding balance and the past due balance. California has a 17% delinquent interest rate, and they also have a penalty. So the difference is pretty wide. Washington, when you appeal your interest, your refund, or your property taxes in Washington State, and you win, they give you 1.73% per year on your refunds. It's not a lot of money. Oregon's giving 12%. California gives 3% on refunds. So I don't think that Oregon is being unreasonable in tying this to the prime rate. The Dash 1 amendments that you have are the result of the work of Gary Bartholomew. Again, when he testified, he indicated there were some issues with assessor's offices being able to compute the interest rate. And so we've tightened that up so that they can do that, because some assessor's offices actually still compute those rates by hand. And so this would help them, and it wouldn't cost money to retool their programs. So that's what the Dash 1 amendments do, and I'd like to actually have Gary explain them in more detail if he's behind me.
Sure.
He is. And then
Mr. Bartholomew. Senator Walker, if you could just get the committee back on the same page. The intent of the bill is to do what?
The intent of the bill is to lower the rate of interest that we are currently paying on refunds. We're paying 12%. The market rate of interest right now that you can earn in a passbook account, for instance, is 2%. Some as low as 1%. The rate of interest is pretty low in the market. So Oregon is paying out thousands of dollars in interest when people appeal their taxes. And let me give you a brief history about how the rate became 16% on delinquent accounts. In 1989, the legislature, through House Bill 2338, created a new funding source for assessment and taxation division because they were impacted by ballot measures. They were impacted by the loss of revenue from the ONC monies, particularly Lane County, because we depended heavily on timber money. And so House Bill 2338 was developed as, it was actually intended to be a permanent solution, though it had a sunset, to add 4% onto the current delinquent interest rate, which was 12% at the time. So it added 4% so that counties would have money to bring their assessments up to date and to do the things that they needed to do. So that brought the delinquent rate up to 16, and it's remained there. The legislature put a sunset on that program, but in 1999, the legislature removed the sunset. And as one of the attorneys in my office on Monday said, he said that 4% was not intended to be a slush fund for assessors or tube feeding of assessors. I found that comment to be quite offensive and wrote to Jim Gangle, the assessor in Lane County, and asked him to respond to that. And then when I received the information from the library, I asked Dave Harrell to do some research. This funding mechanism was made permanent last session because assessors don't have enough money to do their job, because ballot measure 55 and 50 came along, reduced their revenues, and so this was aimed to help provide a funding source for the assessment and taxation departments to do their job effectively. Also, as part of the 1999 bill, the Department of Revenue was required to do a study on how much it costs to fund the A&T programs. And that study will be available in 2004. And I spoke with the department this morning, and they said that the study is not yet complete, but they are in the room today. So what we're trying to do is save money for our local counties, because when they pay out 12% on huge property tax appeals, it's a significant amount of money that can be used in the local communities to fund parks, to fund police officers, and all of the things that local communities need. So, Mr. Chair, does that explain?
Perfect.
Yeah. Okay, great. Then if I might indulge the committee, I'd like Mr. Bartholomew to explain the Dash 1 amendment so that we're all on the same page.
Chair Deckert, members of the committee, I'm Gary Bartholomew, representing the Oregon Association of County Tax Collectors and employed at Multnomah County. As mentioned, when they had the public hearing, our association did, maintaining the neutrality on the bill, but mentioned that we would like to have some changes considered that would make it easier for us to implement, because we have to change computer programs and do these calculations. And also, I tried to implement a few things that I heard about what it sounded like the intent was. So basically, the changes that I made, first off, instead of compounding interest daily, we wanted to retain a simple interest rate per month. Also, it sounded that the intent was to only change the rate going forward. Rather than the way the bill was written, it would have changed it for past periods. So if we did a refund from 1998, we would only pay the current rate for the entire time period. So this would retain the 12% annual rate, or 1% per month, up until November 15th of 2003. And then going forward, the rate would be set based on the prime rate each year.
So the Dash 1s handled the retroactivity issue.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. I also changed the point in time that the rate changed. instead of changing on January 1st, to change November 15th. That would make our life a little bit easier because that's when taxes are due each year, and the majority of our refunds are issued on the current year. So after those are paid on November 15th, then any refunds that are done in the next year as they go through the Board of Property Tax Appeals and so forth would just be paid at one rate. And that may make it a little bit easier on some counties. Different counties have different computer systems. Even some of the smaller ones do manual calculation. I also made a change. The initial bill, after initially setting the rate, it didn't change for 2 years. So I changed it to also continue to change each year, starting November 15, 2004, and going forward. I also changed the calculation of the rate to set the rate based on what the prime rate was on September 1st. That would give the counties time to make what changes they need to do each year, and felt that that would be the best estimate for the next year going forward to use the latest rate rather than an average. I also changed the calculation to round the prime rate to the nearest whole percent and then divide by 12 for a monthly rate. The thinking there, this is just an estimate for the next year, that would probably be precise enough and make it a little simpler for us. We wouldn't always necessarily have a rate change every year. And based on that, we changed the initial rate to 1/3% per month, based on prime rate as it is at this time. And that covers the amendments. So
thank you very much. Questions for the panels? You're very early.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, when this bill came before us before, I think I expressed a concern about the changes that were proposed, and I do absolutely support the good public purpose of reducing the interest rate that we pay on delinquent taxes to taxpayers. But I was I think I expressed at the time I thought that a change would be more appropriate if it were proportional, that we kept a proportionality and changed the interest rate both that we charge and that we pay. And I understand that that would not make this a revenue producer, but it would also bring our rates more in line with market rates that are charged. And I do see a good reason to index these rates, and I do see a good reason to adjust the rates. I just don't see a good reason to adjust the rates with disproportionality. So I think we should choose what it is that the spread will be and maintain the spread just like other financial institutions do.
Mr. Chair, can I respond to
that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Ferrioli, I had this discussion with you, and I'd like to just make two points that I think are quite relevant. The interest paid on refunds is to reimburse the taxpayer for the lost use of their money during the appeal period during which the districts had use of their money. The taxpayer can't make 12% interest in the market. You agree with that position?
I do.
The interest charge is a penalty for not paying their taxes on time, a cost that's carried by all the taxpayers and all of the districts. So I choose not to pay my taxes in a timely fashion, maybe a year. The county doesn't have the use of my money. The other citizens who live in my community do not have the use of my money. So that is why the delinquent rate is set at the rate that it is. There's no correlation between the two. There shouldn't be, because it's simply, if you make that rate low, and I think we made this point last time, if you make that rate low like we had in the 70s, then what people will do is just choose not to pay their property taxes in a timely manner. They'll withhold payment because they can make greater income in other areas of the marketplace. So, hey, I'm going to let these property taxes just sit and sit and sit, and they can sit for 3 years before the county forecloses on me. And people do that. And they did that, and we had testimony at the last hearing that there was actually a class that someone took where they advised that you advise your clients not to pay their property taxes timely because you can get a better deal with the money in the market. So I think that's why it's important to keep the rate where it is and to make sure that people pay their taxes on time. And the fund, the 4% that we take, helps operate these assessor's offices. They don't have the funds to operate. In fact, that's not even enough. And the legislature provides a carrot and stick with that because they give them the 4% money plus collection fees. They charge fees on recording of documents and things. But they also have a stick where they say, we're not going to give you the money if you're not complying with what we need you to comply with. So I think taxpayers are protected, but I sure don't think that taxpayers should get away with not paying a penalty, which we don't charge a penalty. We just charge this interest rate of 16%, which effectively, as Mr. Bartholomew pointed out in his email, is really only 12% because of the way the taxes are computed. So I think it's important that you have to recognize that by not paying their taxes, they're hurting the rest of us.
Mr. Chairman, just in response, I find the argument about reducing the interest paid to be a compelling argument because it cuts our costs. I acknowledge that the interest charged is a motivator to help recalcitrant taxpayers be motivated to pay their taxes, but a proportional spread would be providing the same 4%, for instance, to the jurisdiction, regardless of what the rates would be. So that argument doesn't make any sense to me. So I guess what I'm suggesting is I'd be perfectly willing to support the rate reduction because it's a cost cutter. I'd like to hear some discussion. I think there may be some people here that may offer an opinion about what the purpose of a penalty is and how it functions. And I'd like to also hear the argument about the proportionality question because I think that one speaks to fairness as much as anything else does, and I certainly don't want to disadvantage the jurisdiction. So I'm still convinced that a proportional reduction is the right way to go.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo.
I guess I'd like clarification on what Senator Ferrioli means by proportional reduction. The exact same percent reduction for the delinquency you would propose for the refund?
Mr. Chairman, to Senator Ringo, yeah, that's exactly right. I think that the senator has a good, compelling argument about the fact that we may be paying more interest than is reasonable in the market, and therefore that should be reduced. But on the other side of that equation, taxpayers, I think, should expect a reasonable and proportional reduction in the interest that we charge on their arrearages. And then we should establish the public policy of maintaining some reasonable spread between the two for overheads and funding the jurisdictions that have to do the collections and maintenance and accounting. So I guess what I'm saying is that if it's fair at one end of the equation, it ought to be fair at the other end of the equation as well. And Mr. Chairman, I hope I was clear about that when we first discussed the bill.
Senator Ringo. Senator Walker.
I guess I'll be interested in hearing the follow-up testimony as well. I'm not sure that the connection is as clear as you would make it, Senator Ferrioli. On the one hand, we do want to save jurisdictions from paying out too high of rates on refunds.
Mm-hmm.
On delinquencies, I think we do need to make a decision what is a fair rate to charge when you consider that that rate should include a penalty. Why is it that people are delinquent, and what is a reasonable penalty? And the question as to what a reasonable penalty is may not be connected to the rate of refund. I'm not sure there's a connection, but I'm certainly going to want to hear the testimony about that.
Mr. Chairman, could I add another little complicator to the issue?
Please complicate this.
If the motivating factor, if the thing that we're trying to motivate is people to pay their taxes in a timely manner, we've always accomplished that with a discount. Now, there is a 3% discount for annual taxes on property paid in advance in the first quarter. And, you know, there's reams of testimony and good evidence that taxpayers most taxpayers try to take advantage of that discount. So that's a stronger motivator than a big penalty being racked up. People that have problems paying their taxes have problems paying their taxes, financial problems in a lot of areas. The tax avoider who lets the state, in fact, work as their de facto lender is a pretty foolish strategist in terms of how to manage their money. The state makes a lousy lender, and anybody that thinks you're going to make money because they're not paying their taxes on property or income soon finds out that besides the fees and the interest and the attorney's fees and the court costs, if you total it all up, that's a pretty poor strategy for investment. So I'm not I don't find it compelling that there's a whole subculture out there that are avoiding paying their taxes because they think they're going to rack up some big savings or there's a payoff at the end of that process. The payoff is that the sheriff shows up and puts an attachment on the front door of the property. It's not a very good investment strategy, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Walker.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to respond to just a couple of things. Mr. Bartholomew, in his email that detailed the interest rates, I'd just like to share that part with you, that in Oregon, if nothing is paid after 1 year, the total penalty in interest is 12%. It's 16% on the first third installment due on November 15th. It's 12% on the second third installment due February 15th. And on the third installment due May 15th, it's only 8%. So a $1,000 tax 1 year old would be $120. So it's effectively a 12% interest rate. I don't think that's out of range, particularly when you look at our neighboring states who not only charge a higher interest rate for failing to pay on time, but they also charge a penalty. And some of it's pretty substantial. And in California, they can charge you for the actual cost of collection of the debt. So I think we're being very generous with Oregonians for not doing that, for not paying our taxes in a timely manner. And also, I wanted to speak to a moment about the assessor's office. With the passage of ballot measure 47 and 50, the six-year appraisal cycle that they used to be under was dropped in favor of a more efficient results-based system, which statistically measures the accuracy of values. Lane County cut 9 appraisers as a result of that. Appraisals are now performed where the values are not within statistical standards. And recently, the problem existed when industrial account values exceeded the accuracy standards. Lane County now has reappraised the industrial land over a 3-year period and brought those in compliance. The reduction in appraisers, as Jim Gangle reported to me, meant that they would not have to make other budget cuts in their department or in the area of public safety. And he makes one final point to me. He says, with the passage of ballot measure 47 and 50, there was an inaccurate perception that real market value was no longer important. And he says that that's inaccurate because local option levies, which Eugene has one of those, uses real market value to calculate the amount of the tax. And 11% of the real property accounts in Lane County are taxed at market rate value.
I had just one question. Mm-hmm. This might be the final one unless someone else has. There seems to be a disproportionate number of cases in Lane County, just based on some of the correspondence. And I know the assessor from Lane County is not here. I don't believe they're here.
No.
Do you know why that might be? And you hinted at that there's been cuts.
I think I sort of hinted at that when I indicated that they were behind in industrial property. And we've had a number of industrial places make property tax appeals. And the county is overburdened with them and doesn't have the staff to meet all of the demand and take these into court. And so they generally, at the tax court level.
Uh-huh.
And so they generally win. We are going to have another big property tax appeal with the Sand Pines Golf Course in Florence. That is Lane County. And they're planning on going back quite a ways for a reduction in their property taxes, which means 12% interest we're going to be paying out on that.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it's really a burden for counties. Mr. Bartholomew, did you have anything else to respond?
Thank you, Chair Deckard, members of the committee. I might add just one or two quick points. Senator Frilly, you mentioned the discount. You might just be interested in knowing, I've calculated this before in the past, but On the discount, people are entitled to a 2% discount if they pay not only their November 15th third of their taxes that's due at that time, but the February 15th amount. They get a 2% discount on both the payment that's due then and the one that's not due yet, and it's equivalent to a 16% annual rate of return. And then if you pay the May payment also at that time, it has an additional 10% incremental rate of return. The overall average is 12%. So.
And Mr. Chairman, that is exactly the point I was trying to make. If you want to incent tax payments, then there are ways in the system that we incent those. It's a far better return to pay your taxes in advance than it is to become delinquent on those taxes.
I think the only difference there is that I think you have two different camps of people, though, a little bit. Though. I mean, you have the majority that pay their taxes on time and take advantage of the discount, and then you got another group of people. But also just another comment or two.
There may be some similarities to our legislature with two different camps of people.
10 different camps of people.
Yeah, maybe 10.
We're going to, you had one last point.
Yeah, just real quick, I'll just throw this out, and I don't know if this matters, but I just thought I would mention that it's not usually the same party that's paying delinquent interest that's receiving refund interest. It's not always true, but it's usually not the same party. I don't know if that matters. And the other thing is that although the refund interest rate initially go very low in this bill, remember that we're at historically low interest rates right now, so there won't always probably be quite as wide a gap. Thank you.
Mazin.
Ask Mr. Bartholomew one question. The last time you had two issues that the amendment was supposed to address, one would be the compounding, and the other one you were talking about not having the rate change every year. Because that was a problem. Does this address this issue?
Chair Decker, members of the committee, Mazin, yes, by rounding to the nearest whole percent, it may not change every year. And by the change I made to put it on November 15th each year, it won't be a change for any refunds that are done on the current tax year. So, and that way we thought we would minimize the impact of that. So.
Thank you.
Mr. Bartholomew was the drafter of those Dash 1 amendments, Mr. Chair, because tax stuff gets a little bit beyond my head.
Yes, we know. Definitely. Thank you very much.
And I appreciate his work on that.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. Thank you, Senator Walker. If you want to stick around, we're going to have one panel that's going to testify in opposition to this bill. So it's up to you. I know you have commitments other places.
Okay, I'll sit for as long as I can. I've got committee, but I'll sit and listen. I'm curious as well. Thank you.
Mr. Canary, Mr. David Carmichael, Mr. Todd Libro.
Chairman Decker, members of the committee, I believe I'm the person who gets to go first. My name is Dave Canary. I'm an attorney with Garvey, Schubert & Bear in Portland. Prior to that, I was an Oregon Assistant Attorney General in the tax section representing the Oregon Department of Revenue and County Assessors. So I've been on both sides of the issue. And now I represent property taxpayers and tax disputes. As an attorney that's represented both sides, I would like to appear before you in opposition to Senate Bill 556. I believe it's manifestly unfair. I've got four key reasons for that. The first one is the issue of parity. It's already been brought up. The fact that taxpayers pay 16% interest on delinquent property tax and that the bill proposes that taxing authorities pay only 4.25% seems manifestly unfair. Interest is, as I think Senator Ringo brought up, is meant to compensate one for not having the use of one's money for a period of time. If that is to go down to 4.25% for taxpayers, why is it at 16% for the government? Now, I don't work on a contingency fee basis. I told Senator Walker that. Mine's all on a strictly hourly basis, so I don't benefit at all from whether it's 12%, 16% or 4.25%. But I have heard it referred, the opposition referred to as a bunch of greedy lawyers. Well, if we're greedy lawyers at 12%, what does that make the government at 16%? That's how this bill is going to be perceived. I've heard the argument that advanced that Oregon, like other states, doesn't have penalties.
and Senator Ringo referred to disconnecting penalties from the rate of interest, and I think that's appropriate. But you have to understand, in Oregon, we do have penalties, for instance, in income tax cases, but or in property tax cases where there's been an intentional act to deceive the government. That's what the penalties are for. What this bill says is we're going to penalize everybody, that everybody who fails to pay their taxes on time, whether they have financial issues or not, are subject to a penalty. That doesn't even happen when we have income tax cases. In income tax cases where there's a failure to pay, there's an assessment made by the Department of Revenue as to the reason. There's a interest imposed, and I'll talk about that in a second. And then if there's found to be intentional acts, for instance, frivolous deductions, making an argument that we're not on the gold standard anymore. I had to prosecute a couple of those cases when I was in the Attorney General's office. Those are when penalties are imposed. As Dave Carmichael will tell you, based on his research, and I don't want to get into that, I don't want to duplicate everything that we say up here, Oregon has a history going back many, many decades of connecting and having the same interest paid on refunds as on delinquencies. I don't, in law, the judges look at other states for precedent when they can find none in their own state. Well, Oregon has a long history that Mr. Carmichael talked about. But let me talk about the income tax cases. Unlike property tax cases, this legislature has given the Oregon Department of Revenue, by statute, the right to set interest payments on both interest and delinquencies. The Oregon Department of Revenue set the interest rate at both 7% for delinquencies and interest, and they put penalties on top of that if there is, again, a fraudulent intention to deceive the taxing authority. But that history of being connected, even with the Department of Revenue, even as of this year, they just published the rules as of February 2003 to link them both together.
Mr. Chair? If
Senator Ringo.
Can I just ask you a question about that?
Sure.
For the Oregon Department of Revenue, somebody doesn't pay their income taxes. There is no penalty assessed unless there's fraud?
Typically what happens is there's an assessment, there's a notice of deficiency sent out, saying we've audited your taxes, we found that you haven't paid enough in taxes, mm-hmm. and the taxpayer is given the opportunity to come in and explain. If the department doesn't like the explanation, they issue a notice of assessment, which then includes interest and penalties if they find there's no penalty, if they find there is penalties. Typically, in cases I've represented, taxpayers, there has been no penalty imposed unless there's been, as I mentioned, was on the other side of the Department of Revenue, representing the Department of Revenue, where there's been a very frivolous argument made and penalties are that time imposed.
Mr. Chair, I'm thinking of paying payroll taxes. Are there penalties for not paying payroll taxes?
I don't know, Senator. I have never handled those kind of cases. Income taxes and property taxes is what I've handled as an assistant attorney general and in private practice.
Okay. All right. Just one more, Mr. Chair. It seems to me that, I mean, penalties serve a purpose, trying to make people to comply with the mm-hmm. rules. And on the one hand, you don't want them to be unnecessarily punitive. But it just as a comment, it does seem to me that there's a place for penalties, especially if people know that they'd have to pay a penalty. It would encourage people to comply with the deadlines and comply with the regulation. And
Chairman Decker, Senator Ringo, I don't disagree with you. What I'm saying is that in income tax cases, the interest on refunds and the interest on delinquencies are exactly the same with the right. taxing authority able to assess whether or not the reason for the nonpayment, as Senator Farioli mentioned, might be the fact this person had just lost all their unemployment benefits, that they've run out, and they don't have the money to pay. And that would be inappropriate to provide for penalties. Yet under this bill, we're gonna stick them with 16%. That doesn't seem right.
That's okay.
Senator Ringo.
Let's say we had the exact same interest rate for both the delinquency and refund, but then there was a little bit of a stick for failure to pay, some sort of penalty. Would you object to that scheme?
No, sir.
And the question is, what should the penalty be?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
So if this committee wishes to reduce the 12%, I suggest, as Senator Farioli has mentioned, they also reduce the 16% interest paid by taxpayers. My second argument is I've heard argued that the 12% interest depletes the resources of the county. The committee should know that the amount of interest the counties collect on delinquent payments far exceed the amount that they pay out in tax refunds. I provided a handout to the committee. The amount that is paid out in or that's collected in delinquencies is a matter of 10-1 in Lane County over what's refunded. In Multnomah County, it's 7-10-1. In Washington County, for every $20 collected in delinquent interest, only $1 is paid out. And finally, in Clackamas County, it's a factor of 42-1. So this idea that it's depleting the resources of the county, I think, is a bit of a hollow argument. I agree 12% is too high, but so 16%. And I think bringing them down together to something that's reasonable, Department of Revenue, their 7%, for instance, are tied together, and they're tied to within 1% of what the IRS does. So the IRS is not down at 4.25%. If you look at this delinquent interest versus the refund interest chart, you can see that in Lane County is making $2.5 million, $2.6 million in 2002, and only paying out $268,000. So this argument of a huge depletion and huge tax refunds really doesn't hold up under scrutiny. And these I've documented in the footnotes where all these came from. These came directly from the Departments of Assessment and Taxation in those four counties. Third, I've heard the argument that taxing authorities oppose changing the 16% interest because it offsets the cost of administering the accounts, as well as a portion of it goes to operations. Well, the argument can also be made the retaining the 12% on refunds the other way. Interest on refunds is paid out only after the taxpayer appeals his or her property taxes and prevails in court or arrives at a settlement with the county or the Department of Revenue or receives a favorable decision from the court. In essence, someone has to make a determination there's been an overassessment. This is an expensive proposition for taxpayers, taking not only a great deal of their own time, but also paying out money for attorneys and expert witnesses to come in and testify. Payment of 12% interest is only partially offsets the time and expense the taxpayer has to go through to fight the government. Now, I've heard testimony that the county hasn't got the resources to be involved in these tax appeals and simply rolls over. Well, I'm here to tell you that's patently false. The large tax refunds that caused this bill to be introduced by Senator Walker of Lane County came from industrial property accounts. Industrial property accounts, not land, but the improvements of over $1 million for industrial property accounts are assessed by the Oregon Department of Revenue. And for instance, Hynix, Seneca Lumber, HMT Technology, Shoreward Packaging Company, those are four of the five accounts in Lane County that said they've got huge tax refunds and inferentially that the county somehow rolled over on those accounts, and that's why we need to have this high interest rate of 16% but a low interest rate in 4.25%. Well, I'm here to tell you that the Oregon Department of Revenue and the Oregon Department of Justice, the Attorney General's office, who represents the Department of Revenue in these industrial cases, doesn't roll over. I just finished a two-week trial about 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks in trial, where the Oregon Department of Revenue was represented by two assistant attorney generals, a third assistant attorney general to file pretrial motions, had hired two outside appraisers, one from New York, one from Boise, and had at least nine employees of the Department of Revenue either testified or attended the hearing. That is not rolling over, and that was a significant expense to the taxpayer to try and get a reduction of several million dollars, which is only $30,000 or $40,000 in tax refunds. So what I'm trying to tell you is that the cost of a taxpayer in proceeding these cases is tremendous and only partially offset by the interest. And finally, let me make my last point, was that the 16% interest encourages taxpayers to pay timely. The opposite argument could be made with regard to the 12% interest to assessors and Department of Revenues. I can't tell you how many times I've had assessors tell me that their interest in getting these cases settled was directly had a direct bearing on having to pay 12% interest out of county funds. So consequently, that 12% is an incentive for the counties to get the money back to the taxpayers. It's their money if there's over an assessment, and get the case resolved as soon as possible. Now, let me close by saying that this legislature and Governor Kulongowski have made a point to restore public faith and confidence in government. I submit that Senate Bill 556 appears to be a poster child for government's unfair treatment of taxpayers. To have this disparity between 4.25 and 16, how does anyone in good faith with a straight face taxpayers and say, well, gee, that's really what we need to have done in this state? This state has not had a history of that kind of disparity before, and I suggest that this bill not go any further. I turn it over to Mr. Carmichael, who's got some, I think, to respond to Senator Ringo and Senator Deckard with regard to the history of how those two have been linked together in the past.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you. Senator Ringo.
If I could just ask a couple questions. What is the typical reason that people are delinquent as far as your clients?
I generally represent large utilities and large industrial taxpayers. They typically are not delinquent. They pay, as Senator Fairley, they have an incentive to pay that 3% because they're paying millions of dollars in taxes.
Right.
I think Mr. Carmichael, who represents smaller taxpayers, and you can see the amounts of delinquent taxes versus the refund interest are substantial. The only thing I can think of, and I only think of one example, I represented a homeowner who hadn't paid their taxes. And I point out it's not a requirement you pay your taxes to get into tax court, as it is with income taxes. It was the fact that person was on a fixed income. It was one of my mother's friends who had a house. She was on fixed income. She couldn't pay the taxes. She thought they were too high. I represented her pro bono to try and get it resolved.
Well, Mr. Perry, if I could just explore that a little more, because I think it's important to me at least. We're talking about the interest rate for delinquencies, and I want to know a little bit more about who was delinquent and why.
I think Mr. Carmichael can probably address that better than I can.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, members of the committee, I'm Dave Carmichael. I'm an attorney in Eugene. I've represented property taxpayers since 1980 when the recession came along, and all my business clients kind of went away, but there were a number of people who were having property tax problems.
Residential.
Primarily residential. Most of my clientele has always been residential, including today. And I would say that most typically my experience is I always encourage taxpayers to pay their property taxes because it's 16%. The ones who don't are having typically severe financial hardship. And I've got one client in West Eugene who inherited a lot of industrial property from her father. She's 3 years back, and this is not the way to do it, but there are a number of reasons, including a polluted property, that it's already subject to a mortgage. She doesn't have the ability to pay it, and so she continues to keep it out of foreclosure by paying the third year, which is very expensive. This is not a good way to do business. I wouldn't recommend it. A CPA wouldn't.
Mr. Carmichael, do you see value in having some penalty apply to delinquencies?
Philosophically, I imagine so. I think we've been there since 1989.
What do you mean?
Since going back, we've been linked. The statutes on delinquency interest and refund interest have been linked going back to 1975 at 12%. In 1989 was when Oregon was coming out of the recession, and a number of counties, including Lane County, that underwent a number of financial hardships in the early 80s had laid off a lot of appraisers in their county assessor's office. And what that did is it violated Oregon law that said each piece of property in the county is supposed to be physically reappraised every 6 years. Well, there had been property by 1989 in Lane County that hadn't been reappraised going back to 10 years. And Lane County was not alone. So the Department of Revenue came in and proposed House Bill 2338, commonly known then as the Assessor Funding Bill. And I characterize that as a bit of a slush fund, not in a negative way, but a slush fund because there's discretion that the Department of Revenue had. And what they did was, when the way they funded it, was the interest rate went from 12 to 16 for delinquencies. And that 4% went to the Department of Revenue, and the Department of Revenue went around to the 36 counties, did studies, and to the extent that they found there were deficiencies, they said, if you agree to hire this many commercial appraisers and this many residential appraisers and do this with your tax collection office, we'll end up giving you so much money. In Lane County, it was about $1 million every biennium, as I recall. And to the extent that the county was not willing to follow those recommendations, or to the extent county commissioners said, we're not going to give the assessor as much money, Department of Revenue, as you want us to, the Department of Revenue had the discretion to not provide that funding.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ringo.
I want to explore whether it makes sense to have a penalty for people. And I understand that people have financial difficulties. Still, everybody makes decisions whether to file a return on April 15th or whether to pay the property tax on time. And I just have a sense that some stick behind them makes a difference.
I was not here on March 13th when the original testimony came in. I did listen to it over the Internet. I heard Diane Belt from Washington County testify, as I recall, that about 95% of the money comes in after the first year, 95% of the property taxes. And so to the extent that there are amounts that don't come in, those get paid with 16% interest. That, to me, is a huge penalty. It's credit card interest rates. And so my understanding, and I'm not, Diane Belt would probably be a better witness to this than I would, but my understanding as to the way things have gone in Lane County in years prior, and I don't know about recently, but years prior, is at the point that finally all the money came rolling in, maybe 4 or 5 years after the tax year had expired, they ended up with more than 100% of the money that they had budgeted because of all the interest. And you look at the percentages, the ratios that are getting paid that the county is receiving in delinquent interest, 10 to 1, 20 to 1, that is an extreme gap. And it seems unfair to me that you're going to take that gap and multiply that by 3 if the current bill becomes law. So that doesn't seem fair to me. Based on my understanding of the current rates of collection, I don't think there's a problem, is my perception.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And if I may provide some brief testimony,
please,
I understand.
We have one more bill today, but please want to give you your
very brief. Thank you.
Due, and Mr. Liebau also.
Thank you. And I guess what I'd like to talk about is I've heard talk about what they do in California and what they do in Washington. And when you're in the tax court or the magistrate's division, those issues as to what goes on in other states, as Dave Canary points out, that comes up when you don't have any guidance from your current state. We have a really long period of history here, and I put together a letter with several exhibits, and it talks about prior to 1975, these statutes, the deficiency interest statute, the refund interest statute, were linked at 8%. It went up to 12% in 1975, and I thought it was curious when I actually went back and looked at the statutes. When you looked under 311.806 to see what's the interest rate I get between 1975 up until the assessor funding bill passed, it actually said, take a look at the deficiency interest statute because it's the same. They were linked at the hip. They were joined at the hip. And essentially, this 4% increase came about because of the problems with assessor funding. And they needed to get within the six-year reappraisal. That was 1989. It extended to 1998. And the concept was, let those 6 years come and go, let the assessors go out and hire the appraisers they need and get up to speed. No, it was not intended to be a permanent 4% amount of money that the assessor was always going to have. It was designed to sunset in 1998. And prior to 1998, along comes ballot measure 50. And ballot measure 50 says, you know what, for properties that existed in 1995, there's never going to be any more reappraisals of those properties unless you have new construction, because there's no reason to reappraise them. The assessed value is going to be 3% a year, in, you know, higher each year, but it's based on the real market value in 1995. And so the only new appraisals that need to happen at this point are new construction, and where you have remodels that are substantial enough to get in excess of the $25,000 limit. Excuse me, the $10,000 current limit, or $25,000 over a five-year period. So between the assessor funding bill in 1989 that says we need to give the county all this money because they need to hire all these appraisers, now we've got ballot measure 50 in 1996 that says you don't need all that many appraisers anymore.
Mr. Kahn.
Senator Ringa.
There was some testimony earlier that usually the same people that are delinquent are not the same set of people seeking refunds. Is that true or not true?
Well, a delinquent person has a problem seeking a refund because they still owe 3 years back.
I took that testimony to refer to a group of people, not the individuals themselves.
Chair, Senator Ringo, I have a broad diversity of clients, and it's difficult for me to compartmentalize them, but I have done a number of appeals for probably more appeals, because 95% are current after the first year, more mm-hmm. appeals for people who have paid their property taxes timely than for the folks who are in financial distress.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I mean, to me that seems with the difference. I mean, when I asked earlier who are we talking about when we're talking about delinquencies, and it seems to me the answer is probably people in financial distress.
Correct. That's my experience.
Whereas people seeking refunds very well may not be, like Mr. Kinnear's utility clients or even homeowners, that they could have all the money in the world, but they're challenging the tax on their house in terms of whether it's the right amount. So, generally it does seem to me that those are generally separate universes of people.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, that may well be. I guess my experience is that it's not whether they owe a delinquency or not, or whether they're current as to whether they're filing an appeal. The reason they typically file an appeal is because they have a good faith belief that this tax bill, number, is too high.
So they're
wrong.
Right. So they pay it and then they ask for some of it back.
Or they don't pay it if they don't have the money.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Please.
Sorry. I guess I'm still not convinced that it's necessary to connect them, that the parity issue is that important. And I understand your arguments seem to be couched in terms of, gee, this is giving our government too much money, I guess I'm not convinced that that's the real issue here. But could you break down to just a nutshell why you think the two rates are linked, why they need to be linked? Because you're not fair to one, fair to both, but if we're talking different groups of people, I don't see that connection.
They've historically been linked. Since prior to 1975, they've been linked. They've been identical. They were at 8% prior to 1975. They were deficiency interest, refund interest, both at 8%, both at 12%. And when did we add the 4% kicker? We added the 4% kicker at the point that there was a problem, and when all properties needed to be reappraised within the 6-year cycle. And that isn't Oregon law anymore.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So really appreciate your testimony, Mr. Leval. Appreciate the correspondence. Hope I got your last name correct.
Mr. Chair, if I could make one
Please.
Brief comment. I've spent a lot of time doing the best I could to answer Senator Ringo's questions. And I will pass over a couple of the comments that I've made in writing. I'm sure you've had an opportunity to read them. One matter that was an extreme concern to me is the fact that I heard, as I listened to this on the Internet, this testimony, I heard factually inaccurate statements that were made by a witness to this committee at the March 13th hearing. And whichever way this committee chooses to go, I think it's very important that this committee have factually accurate information. I know a little bit about what I'm talking about when we're talking about appeals in Lane County. Eugene is in Lane County. That's my home county. The testimony that came from John Brown, the real estate appraiser, that spoke on behalf of the sponsor of the bill, and I'm just going to select an excerpt. He said, even if you don't win at the current level, being you lose at the Board of Property Tax Appeals, you just take it to the magistrate level, and rarely does the county administration have the staff time or resources to confront you at that level. You win by default. You automatically get the refund. Looking below, you'll note that he estimates that county staff, when they do any work, they spend about 15 minutes. That was another direct quote. And lastly, when Senator Walker was concluding her comments on behalf of the bill, she says, as Mr. Brown indicated, the county assessor office is very low staffed. They just don't have the time to go to all these appeals, and I think that's why you're seeing so many of these. Now, from July 1, 2000, forward up to today, it is not true to suggest that the county skipped magistrate trials. They showed up at those. It's also true that they experimented with not showing up prior to July of 2000. And you can see that on Exhibit 2. This is a document that I requested and I was provided. And it says here that in April, May, and June of 2000, there were 33 magistrate trials heard without county participation. And from July of 2000 to January of 2001, there were 27 magistrate and Department of Revenue trials. And of those 27 trials, how much time got spent? 15 minutes in preparation? Not even close. 277 hours. That works out to 10.26 hours per case. And that's the truth of the matter. The truth of the matter is that within the last three-year time period, the county has been showing up at magistrate trials. And you were told that they weren't. And I don't know to what extent that was important in listening to this bill and giving consideration to your vote. But whatever way you decide to go, I simply wanted to make sure that you understood that what the real truth was. Also, the suggestion that Lane County is not being active at the magistrate level, if you turn to the last page, what you see is that Lane County is an activist county, has currently, I'm aware of three appeals that they've filed for the current year on BOPTA reductions where they didn't agree, and so they appealed it on to the magistrates. And here you can see for the 2001 year, whereas 32 counties accepted the results of their local Board of Property Tax appeals, and of three other counties, you know, without doing any appeals, and three other counties either did one or two appeals. But Lane County led the league. Appeals of reductions granted by the local boards that the assessor didn't agree with. So I just wanted to make sure that this committee understands that the Lane County assessor has not rolled over as these big industrial accounts that David Canary talked about earlier. The other side hadn't been rolling over there either. These are cases where even when the county didn't show up to defend, they always filed an answer to the complaint, denying allegations. So the taxpayer, to win, he had to show up at the trial, typically a telephone trial, had to show up at the trial and had to put on substantial evidence. He carries the burden of proof. If you don't carry the burden of proof, the taxpayer loses the case. And the proof needs to be with substantial evidence showing that there's an overvaluation. And so any suggestion that there's something going on in Lane County that that is because they're not attending, they're not defending, that's not true. And I wanted to set that right.
We appreciate it, Mr. Carmichael. Your testimony was very well defined and complete, and I had the chance to review it and appreciate it. Ms. Committee, we'd like to move Senate Bill 807. They've been very patient with us on our agenda for two or three days. Mr. Lebo, I really want to give you an opportunity to testify.
Thank you. I'll be very quick. I realize there's risk in going third amongst lawyers. My name is Todd Lebo. I'm a real estate appraiser. I've worked in the property tax industry in Oregon for 25 years. I spent five of those years defending appeals on behalf of Clackamas County Assessor's Office. For the last 20 years, I've represented taxpayers in overvaluation cases. Seven of the last 11 years, I've been the appraiser appointed by Clackamas County to their Board of Equalization, to their Board of Ratio Review, and to their Board of Property Tax Appeals. I'm currently the appraiser to the Board of Property Tax Appeals in Clackamas County. A number of the points that I wish to raise, I've raised through correspondence to the members of the committee, and Mr. Carmichael and Mr. Canary have raised some of those points as well, and it's because we have a shortage of time. I want to address two issues here that I think the committee needs to consider in their decision on whether this bill should go forward. I'm very pleased to hear that one of the amendments has come forward as a reversing the retrospective nature of this bill. That had to go away, and apparently it did. One of my biggest concerns is somebody who works right now for the public sector, trying to be a liaison between the taxpayers and the public sector assessors and Department of Revenue, is that this bill, as it's written, goes a long way to enhance the distrust that's already in the minds of many taxpayers in the state of Oregon. It concerns me. It's overwhelming because the property tax system is overwhelming to most of the taxpayers that come off the street. And now you're asking to change the amount of refund interest to one-fourth of the amount of interest that is paid on delinquent taxes. I'm sorry that Senator Ringo is not here at this point to hear my take on the issue of penalties versus incentives, but for your benefit, I think they're one and the same thing. And right now we've got a tremendous incentive on behalf of taxpayers to pay their taxes when they can, because there's a 16% hit, which is higher than most money you can borrow from, even in credit cards at this time. Mm-hmm. On the other side of the coin, the issue of incentive is extremely important for most assessing jurisdictions. There's a marked change in behavior when the assessor knows that there is a 12% simple interest due upon refunds from properties that have been overassessed. And removal of that incentive from the other side is going to be certainly a very harmful in the character of the environment of trust of government in this state. And I urge you to consider voting against this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Comments? Thank you very much. Appreciate all the work that the panel put into your testimony. We will not be moving this bill this afternoon. Senator Walker, we're good. Great. Close the work session on Senate Bill 556. Open a work session on Senate Bill 857. John Marshall, you are walking out. I'd like to move this bill this afternoon. Did you have any comments that you wanted to? No? Okay.
Chairman, are we in work session?
We're in work session on Senate Bill 807.
Do we have the dashboard amendments to consider, Mr. Chairman?
Steve, I think they're in front of us.
They have been handed out, I believe.
Chairman, I'll move the dash one amendments to 807.
Senator Farrelly has moved the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 807. Discussion. Objections. So
on. Chairman, I'd move the amended version of 807 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Farrelly has moved the Senate Bill 807 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and discussion.
Good bill.
Good bill.
It's going to help our friends in parts of the state. We need that.
Yeah. more tools in the toolbox. Any objections? No orders. Senator Farioli, would you like to carry the bill?
I'm a co-sponsor of this bill. I don't
know. I'll be happy to carry, Mr. Chairman, and co-carry if Senator Perkin would like to do that.
No. We're adjourned. Thank you very much, committee.
Oh, boy.